This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Hey, what's up? It's Dean Bakari coming back at you with another episode of the podcast. And today, I'm joined by the infamous Tucker Max. In case you haven't heard of him, Tucker's the author of three number one New York Times best-selling books, including the famous I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, which pretty much cemented his position as America's biggest asshole. But more recently, he's gone from asshole to CEO, having started a company called Book in a Box that helps people turn their ideas into books in a way that he says is better, 10 times faster than the traditional time-consuming route to publishing a book. So if you've ever wanted to write a book but haven't done so yet for whatever reason, then you're going to love this episode, because today we're talking about everything you need to know about getting your ideas out of your head and getting them pressed and published into a book. So let's get right into it. Tucker, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it. How'd you get started with Book in a Box?
It was a total, like almost everything in my life, I fell totally ass backwards into the situation. Like I was at an entrepreneur dinner, and this woman, you know, because of my publishing and book success, she asked me this question that probably I get asked every day, some version of, how do I get my ideas into a book, right? Like she basically told me that people have been asking her to write a book for a decade. And she, you know, runs a very successful company, and she doesn't have time to sit down at a computer for a year and go through the normal process. And so I asked her, I'm like, are you asking me how to write a book without writing it? And kind of teasing her, right? And she said, yeah, I am, kind of. And so then I started lecturing her about hard work and about the creative process, and, you know, all the nonsense BS cliches that you hear from every writer and creative, right?
Right.
I gave her all those, and she rolled her eyes at me, and she said, Tucker, this is an entrepreneur dinner. Are you an entrepreneur? And I was like, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I that's why I'm here. She's like, well, I'm not so sure that's true. She said, because I am an entrepreneur. I spend all day helping people solve my solve their problems. Are you going to help me solve my problem or just lecture me about hard work? oh.
Damn.
She was totally right, is the problem. Like, I was being an elitist, snobby douchebag. And so, of course, I became obsessed with this issue. How do I get a book out of her head without her having to sit at a computer for a year typing it out? And then working through a process which she doesn't even understand. You know, like, she knows her subject really well, but writing a book is a totally different thing from having great ideas in your head. And so I got together with my buddy Zach Obrant, and we kind of put this process together. Basically, the way it came to my head was, I remembered that some of the greatest thinkers in history have never written anything down. So, for example, Socrates, Jesus, Buddha, Malcolm X, Marco Polo, Winston Churchill, like, these are the titans of Western and Eastern culture, and none of them ever wrote anything down. Someone else committed all their words to paper. So I was like, well, obviously there's a way to do this. Let me see if this works. And so we kind of came up with a system where we would interview her and then structure her ideas into an outline, then interview her off of the outline and get all the content out of her head in a very structured way, then record that, transcribe it, and then edit that into book prose. And I honestly, I didn't think it was going to work. I still had the idea in my head that, like, writing is this mystical, magical art that can't be reduced to a series of steps. And it turns out I was totally wrong. Like, we ended up creating a really, really good book using this process with her. And from there, dude, it was like one of those, like, true product market fit stories. like out of nowhere. I think I did one or two podcasts and talked about this and then wrote one article on LinkedIn of all places. And we ended up doing like $400,000 in sales in three or four months. And it was just Zach and I. And it was like, okay, we obviously hit gold. Like, we solved the real problem that a lot of people really have. We need to do this full time. And so that's what we're doing.
That's huge. That's awesome. Yeah. I think that's really cool, because it reminds me a lot about, you know, when I started my company, Flashbooks, we summarize nonfiction books, right? We'll take a 300-page book and then turn it into a, you know, a 10-page, you know, PDF or Kindle file or audiobook summary that you can listen to on your way to work. And I think it's, you know, it's like about the saving people time, right? Compressing decades into days or hours into minutes for people.
And getting at what matters, right?
Yep.
Of course.
Yep. Awesome. So let's talk about, you know, say somebody wants to write a book,
right?
And, you know, they don't know how to go about it. Like, what would they do to get started? What are some suggestions you've got? Not just with, but like, definitely talk about Book in the Box, but also other options as well.
Yeah, of course, Dean. We actually wrote a book that describes our entire process, because we get this question a lot from people, because our service is expensive, man. We charge $20,000, and that's just unreasonable for most people to invest in a book. There are plenty of people for whom that investment makes a lot of sense. But for the ones that don't, there's a book. It's called The Book in a Box Method. It's on Amazon. Mm. Or you can go to bookinabox.com/books. And it describes you can enter in your email and get it for free. Any of your listeners can. But I'll kind of walk you through the basic idea. So what we do is, the first thing you must do in a book is actually decide or figure out, do I have a book in me, and what is it going to get me, right? And because if you don't do that right, everything else, you screw everything else up. So what we did, the way we position, it's called positioning. And the way we do it is, we ask people three questions. The first one is, what result do you want this book to create for you, right? Like, what result, what why are you writing the book? What do you need to get out of it? Not what do you hope to get out of it, right? Like, we all hope our books become massive runaway bestsellers and make us rich and famous, and that would be nice. But obviously that's not what you have to get out of the book. That's like saying your investment strategy is winning the lottery, right?
Right.
So you, what you have to get out of it is like sort of the result that must come about to make this book worthwhile. So for people, that could be keynoting conferences. It could be driving leads to your business. It could be finding high-dollar clients. It could be establishing your authority and credibility in a field so that you can, you know, get a job there, start a company there. You can launch a product or a company. You can do a million things with a book, right? You just need to know sort of what they are. Once you know what it is, so let's take a simple example. Let's say you want to be a professional speaker, or you want to just get speaking gigs, keynoting tech conferences, for example. So that's the result you have to get. So then the next question, question two, is what audience do you have to reach with your book in order to get that result? So if your goal that you have to reach is keynoting tech conferences, then you only have two audiences you have to reach. You have to reach the people who go to those tech conferences, and you have to reach the people who book the speakers for those tech conferences. And that's it. If you reach a bunch of other people, that's super great and that's fantastic. But you're only, the only people you have to reach are those two audiences. Now we start talking about what your book is going to be about. That's the third question, is what do you know that is interesting and valuable to that audience? Right? So that's what your book needs to be about. So for example, if you have some piece of wisdom or some new technique about product development that's going to be super interesting to tech people, then that needs to be what your book is about, because that will be appealing to the audience you need to reach, and then that audience is going to get you whatever it is you want, in this case, keynoting conferences, right? And so by doing that, you do what's called positioning your book, right? It's exactly what you would do with any company or product or service. Most people, for whatever reason, don't do this with books. I think it's because books have this weird cultural space where a lot of people see them as sort of like personal validation, or they have put this heavy emotional component.
Yeah,
into
or
books.
Authors are really funny, man, because they'll they think that all they need to do is write the book. And then they're like, I'll just find a marketer. I'll find somebody else to do the marketing for me, or people will just buy it on Amazon and read it.
Right.
But marketing is just as important, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. Those people you're talking about, and you're right, there are so many of those people, they think that marketing is a different thing than writing the book, right? Which is actually not true. Everything I just outlined to you is essentially marketing. Positioning is marketing. Right. It's only called positioning for books because that's like the word that you use in the industry, because you're trying to figure out what position on the shelf it fits in a bookstore. That's how the term came about, right? But if you don't understand that, then writing a book is just writing any book, whatever random idea in your head, is a terrible, terrible, terrible way to go about it. Because chances are you're going to write the book that you want to write, not the book that anyone else wants to read. You know? And that's the thing about a book. It's like no one would ever sit there and say, okay, I'm going to build this company that I want to exist, but I don't care if it sells anything that anyone wants. Like, that's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. But yet they don't apply the same logic to books, except books are even more important to apply it to. There are, like, last year I think there were more than 300,000 books published in English. There's essentially an infinite number of books. You cannot read them all. You can't even hear about them all. So what you've got to do, you've got to really focus on understanding why you're writing this book and who you're trying to reach if you want to get something out of it.
Right.
You know, if you don't want to get something out of it, that's cool. Then what you did is you wrote what's called a diary, and you don't.
Yeah.
So that's the basic, that's how we start. Then the next step is pretty simple. It's called structuring. And that's the step before outlining. And essentially what you do is you sit down and imagine that someone in your audience, right? The audience you want to reach, someone who's interested in what you have to say, and they want to learn what you're teaching them, how would you walk them through it so they could leave your conversation and go do whatever it is you're teaching them, right? So like if I was teaching someone how to write a book, I would say, okay, there's five major steps. These are the five steps. Here are the kind of the sub actions under each step, right? That would be the outline of my conversation. That would be all the things I have to hit in my conversation. So that creates the book structure, right? From there, you just create the outline, which essentially means filling in that structure with all the specific stories you're going to tell to get your points across, the points you want to make, the stories you want to tell to get your points across, and any sort of any other tactics or observations or things that you need to put in your book. Right. And that usually in our process, that gets to about a 15 to 20 page outline, which is, you know, like the architectural plan for your book.
Right.
Then instead of sitting at a computer and typing, this is one of the key things. Don't do that, because that takes months, if not years. What's much easier and much fluid and usually produces a better book is instead of typing, you talk your book out. But don't just talk like to nobody. We the way we do it in our process, and we recommend people do it, is you need to give the outline to someone else who's interested in your subject, who wants to learn about it, right? And who will sit there with you for extended periods of time and have them interview you off of the outline. So essentially the outline is just a blueprint for them to ask you questions.
Right.
And so the way we do it, we have professional journalists who ask our authors questions using the outline as a blueprint. We have book editors and book agents who help them craft the outlines, and then we have professional journalists who literally ask questions for a living, who do the interviews. But you can record the whole thing. It usually takes anywhere from 6 to 12 hours for an interview sort of style off of an outline to get everything out of your head about your book that you want to write. At least that's what it takes us in our process. It doesn't take much longer than that. You record all of that, and then you get that transcribed. And now what you have is essentially a rough draft of your book. But the important thing to realize is that a transcription of people talking is not...
It's not good.
Not good. It's not easy to read. But the good news is you have, everything you know you needs to be in your book is there. It's in words, it's on the page, and it's in the right order. But now what you have to do is translate that into book prose, right?
So that's where you guys come in with the
so
you guys are already in the picture. You've helped with, like, you know, taking it from outline. You do the transcription, and then you guys tighten it up, your writers.
Right. So we do everything. If you're paying us $20,000, all you're doing with us is talking on the phone. I'm talking about, like, you were saying, like, how could someone go about it themselves, right?
Right, right.
So I'm describing the process if you were doing it yourself. If you're doing it yourself, and this is what our freelancers do, is basically open up two Word docs on your computer, put them side by side. Uh-huh. One has the transcription, the other one is blank. And then you go paragraph by paragraph, and you just copy and paste one paragraph, pull it over to the new doc, and then rewrite it. So it's the same words, the same ideas, and even in the same voice. It just needs to flow on the page.
Right.
So if you can write an email, you can do this. It's not, don't think of it as, because you're not starting from scratch. You know, you're not starting with a blank page trying to conceptualize everything. You're just taking the spoken word and translating it to the written word. You see what I'm saying?
Right,
And so what that does, it accelerates the process drastically, but you end up generally, if not at the same place, a better place. And then you just keep doing that over and over. And what you generally end up with is a really great finished draft. The last step, of course, is editing. And here's what we recommend for people. This sound, it's going to sound weird, but it works really well. Print your book out, like on a printer, physically, once you have that draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then read it out loud to a person. Don't don't like read it under your breath. If you read your written words out loud, you can hear things that you wouldn't actually recognize if you're just reading printed text.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do that with articles. I do even before interviews. Like I'll write out the intro, or I'll, you know, if somebody has written it for me, I'll read it out loud. Like right before we jumped on this interview, I read your intro a couple of times real quick. Just be like, oh, would I really say that if I was talking out loud, or am I just kind of bullshitting myself right now?
And that's why your intro sounded good, not only because you practiced it, but because your written text that you can read out loud and make sense always reads well, always, every single time. You know, listen, don't get me wrong. You can have written text that doesn't sound good read out loud that still works well written. But if you're not a writer, it's hard to actually know what that is and isn't. Yeah. If it sounds good, it always reads good.
Yeah.
Right. So then do that once and you've now got a finished manuscript. And then you just need to go through the rest of the publishing process, which is book cover, interior design, putting it on Amazon, et cetera, which if you paid us, we can do it. We do it for you. But if you're doing that yourself, the only big thing with the publishing process, you have to care. All of it's really easy. The thing you have to care about is just make sure that everything is super professional.
Yeah.
Because people don't just judge your book by the cover. They judge you by the professionalism of your book.
That's so true. Even like grammar, like grammatical errors are like, dude, you killed somebody. You killed somebody.
No, seriously. I mean, like people, I can't tell you how many times people are like, oh, I really liked your book. I thought it was hilarious, but I ended up returning it to the bookstore because I found a word misspelled.
Right.
And like, there's some like nonsense. Like, right. They act like you killed someone. If there's two grammar errors in a book, that's 100,000 words.
Yeah. It's hilarious. Dude, you make it sound so easy.
I'm sorry. Like I kind of went like pretty long and intense there for a second. It is actually, that's the thing, is that it's not hard to do. That for years, books used to, writing still is mystified, and there's like this mystique around it. And I was one of the worst people about that. Like I used to always talk about, I used to basically art shame people and be like, oh, if you can't write a book, it means that you're just not one of the special chosen elite. You know what I'm saying? And no, because I was like one of the people who sold a lot of books and was famous for it. So obviously my narrative was, well, it must be really hard and special and unique because I did it, right? Which is total BS. It's total nonsense. And now that like I kind of like got called out and I realized, oh, wow, this is just a series of steps. The hard part with writing is not writing. The hard part with writing is having something worth writing.
It's having the
ideas, actually writing them up, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So like just thinking back to the first book that you wrote, right? and not necessarily the actual book itself, but like the whole, everything that led up to you making it such a massive success. Like, what did you do to make all that happen back then?
So I'm glad we're doing this interview now and not a few years ago, because I'll tell you, I'll tell you why. For years, when people would ask me that question, it's a great question. Why did your book succeed massively and other books didn't? And a lot of people gave me like marketing props. Oh, you did this and you did that and marketing, whatever. And I used to tell that story all the time. I used to think I was a marketing genius. And since I've kind of realized that I'm not, that's it's not I was lying. It was just I was fooling myself. What I've come to realize, because since then, I've worked on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books now with some really high-level people, mm-hmm. People who even sold more books than me, and I've helped so many of them. And I've realized that I think everything I used to think is wrong. I used to think marketing mattered a lot with books, and now I think that it basically doesn't matter at all, except maybe the week or 2 weeks of launch. If you do a lot of the right things, you can get a little bit of a spike, you know? Mm-hmm. But outside of long-term, marketing is totally useless for books, because pretty much every book, long-term success is dictated by word of mouth. And so the only thing that matters to word of mouth is really only two things. How good is your book, the quality of the actual ideas and the content inside the book, and then the marketing materials around the book, meaning the title, the cover, and like kind of who talks about the book a lot, which is still kind of word of mouth in a way, right?
Right.
So, and that's it, man. Like, people ask me all the time that question, and my answer, my trite answer is always write a great book.
Right, right. And of course, you worked really hard, obviously, to get everything out there like that.
Well, I mean, but write a great, here's the thing. I say write a great book, and people say, yeah, pretend I've done that. Now what do I do? And I'm like, no, and I kind of look at them like, you're never going to sell any books, so just stop worrying about it.
Right.
Because part of writing a great book is understanding what do I have to say that's interesting and valuable to what audience, and am I putting my book in front of them? You know,
that's so true. It's like, because if you put in all the work to do all that, then you're going to be understanding what people actually need and what they want, right, where they are, and then you'll start finding those people and then getting it out there to them, writing blog posts and contributing and talking to people. And yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly right. You've actually nailed it exactly. So whenever someone says, pretend I've done that, now what do? I always say, you haven't actually done any of the work, because if you had, you would be asking me about how do I reach this type of person looking for this sort of material, because you would know that already if you'd actually done the work.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. It actually kind of reminds me of, you know, probably four or five years ago, I like right when I was getting into this space, I wrote a book, and I didn't have any audience whatsoever. Like, nobody knew me, nobody knew about my work. I just wanted to write a book because I had, you know, I just had an inspiring message I wanted to share with people. But I didn't know who was going to read it. I thought I was going to write a book and I was going to explode. Like, it was going to be, you know, it'd be a best-selling book and it would skyrocket. And none of that happened. You know, I wrote the book. I heard nothing but crickets. And, you know, because I realized that one reason behind that was, obviously, I needed to learn more about the whole process behind writing. But then also, I didn't have enough people reading the work that I was already putting out there. And, you know, at this point, you know, 4 years later, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of people reading my blog, listening to the podcast. And, you know, I was more recently, just recently approached by a traditional publishing house about publishing a book with them. And so I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are on two things: independent publishing versus working with a big publishing house. And also, what if somebody who doesn't have any traffic, doesn't have any audience, people listening to them, but wants to write a book, should they try to build their audience first and then write the book? Or
So super questions. Great. Let me do traditional versus independent first, and then let's go to the audience or book first. So I actually think pretty much everybody should be independently publishing their book now. There are some exceptions where traditional makes sense. So let me, or traditional, it might be the better path. If you can get a big advance from a traditional publisher and you really need that money, then that makes sense. And I define big advance as $500,000 or more, right? Now, I'm going to tell you, everyone says, yeah, I'm sure I can get an advance. And I'm like, how big is your email list? And like, what email list? I'm like, you're never going to get an advance.
Mm.
So I'll tell you the way traditional publishing works now, today in 2016, is that the only people they are giving big advances to are people that have big audiences already established.
Right.
Because traditional publishers cannot sell books. They don't know how to sell books. They've never been able to sell books, honestly. And so like all these little authors are like, oh, but that's why I'm going to a publisher, so that they'll, you know, teach me what to do and sell my book for me. And I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Like when I say, and I'm not exaggerating one bit, you can't even get a meeting with an agent unless you have 25,000 or more Twitter followers, 50 or 100,000 or more Instagram followers, an email list of 25,000 to 50,000 or more. I mean, like, you have to have real audience, hard numbers that you can reach and you can sell into,
right,
or they don't even take the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. They don't even take the meeting. Publishers have actually gotten pretty sophisticated at how they, like, they know that Twitter followers don't actually convert to book sales, but Instagram followers are really good at converting to book sales in certain categories, like health and fitness and things like that. And then like YouTube stars, some of them don't convert at all. Some of them convert really well. And so they know very well. But if you don't have an audience, you cannot get that advance. All right. So if you need the money and they're willing to give you a bunch, then it can make a lot of sense, because that's basically free money. Right.
Right.
The other group of people that I think it makes a lot of sense to go, it can make a lot of sense to go with traditional publishers, is if you have a book that the only way the book can be successful for you is to get a lot of mainstream media, then it still makes sense to go with traditional publishing. Not if you want to get that media, but I mean the only way for it to be successful, because there's literally not a reader on earth who cares about who published a book. No one looks at or notices or cares about that.
Right, that's true. Readers aren't going to crack open the book and look at if Penguin Random House published it.
No. And even if they did, it doesn't impact a purchasing decision, except the people who write for mainstream media outlets.
Mm.
They still give credibility to being chosen by traditional publishing outlets. But that being said, you know, the big five still publish tens of thousands of books a year. So your odds of being covered are very low. You know, like it basically, if you're not already famous or you don't write a breakout hit book, they're not going to cover you. You know, that's just the way it works. You're going to have to get attention in lots of other ways. So what that boils down to is if you're famous and you have a big audience and you don't need traditional publishers, they're actually the best bet for you, because they'll still write you big multi-million dollar checks. So that means you can reduce the risk of the financial risk of writing a book drastically, and you can guarantee yourself a return. So for those people, it makes sense. For your audience, there's probably virtually no one in your audience who should even try to go with traditional publishing, because there's so many downsides, dude. Like, you don't own the rights and royalties, so you can't do most of the cool marketing things you can do if you own your own book. You can't do those. They take at least 18 months, usually 2 years, to publish a book. So you're going to be sitting on your hands waiting forever. They own and control all the creative decisions, so they could very easily screw everything up, get your title wrong, just do everything wrong. If you're using a book to promote something else, your business or your career, they don't care about that. They care about selling copies. So
right,
they're not going to help you with your career. They're only going to do things that sell copies, which is usually not good for a lot of people. And even if you're a novelist, they're not going to do anything to promote the book. So why give them 80% of the profit or more? It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So, for you might be, we can talk a little bit more offline if you really want to get into numbers, and I'll help you understand the dynamic. But dude, if they're not offering you at least, man, $500,000 is tough to turn down depending on various circumstances. You could be the type of person who's in a situation where it actually makes sense for you. Right. Especially because you've already written some books, you already have an audience, et cetera, et cetera. But you got to be careful, man, because a lot of what they're starting to go after smaller and smaller self-published authors. Like it used to be you had to have 100,000 copies sold self-published before they'd even talk to you. Now they're going after people who have as few as 25,000 copies sold because essentially it's a cash grab for them. Right. Now they know you have an audience. And so that what they do is they make you take the self-published book down and then they redo it, usually worse, and then they force you to go out to your list and try and resell it to them. It's total BS, dude.
They actually did that with an author that I know, actually is a pretty well-known author.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good point.
I know. So that's really about it. Like it used to be that it conferred a lot more status and credibility. Now it kind of doesn't matter anymore. There's been so many massive breakout hits that have been independently published that kind of no one really cares anymore.
So how does an independently published author get into places like Barnes and Noble though? And is that still, does that still hold any clout?
Yeah. I was gonna say, the question is, why do you want to be in Barnes and Noble? You know, because it used to be in order to sell, you needed to be in bookstores. That was like 10 years ago. Now less than 20% of books are sold in any physical location. And that includes Target and Costco and the other big box retailers. It really is, B&N is such a small piece of the book equation at this point. And again, the question kind of is, why are you even writing a book? Right.
So also just to kind of go back to that real quick though. I mean, don't you think that there's a lot of credibility that comes with getting your book on an actual physical shelf though, don't you think?
No.
Really?
No. If we were having this conversation in 2001, I would say, of course, you have to, no doubt.
Right.
Even in 2006, it was still migrating and changing a lot. In 2016, absolutely not. Like, I would even tell you that hitting major bestseller lists is becoming irrelevant now. Because the lists are all so gamed. And so unreliable.
That's true, yeah.
They're so gamed and they're so unreliable that no one pays attention anymore. Like, for example, if you wanted to be a premier keynote speaker, you kind of had to have a New York Times bestselling book, you know?
Right.
And if you were charging, let's say, 10 grand a speech before and you got a book like that, you could go up to 20 or 25, like overnight, right?
Right.
Nowadays, having even a New York, not a bullshit Amazon bestseller, but a New York Times bestseller really doesn't change much. It might get you 5 grand more maybe if you had like a number one bestseller. You know what the big indicator now is, status indicator is a TED Talk, right?
Mm.
So for speakers. So for like the status indicator is moving off of just having a book or having having a mainstream published book or having a best-selling book. It's just not, it doesn't mean as much anymore because so many people have spammed and scammed that system. So now actually what a
and
lot
by
of
the
people,
way, if you're listening, what Tucker means is like what some people will do to get on to rise up the list is they'll get, if they've got extra money already before they publish the book, they'll buy like 10,000, 20,000 copies of it, right, when they publish it.
Yeah. Well, and they have to use firms to do it. There are companies that exist to do this, like ResultSource and stuff. And basically, they spend $250,000 or more, and they buy 10 to 20,000 copies all through different bookstores that all report their sales to the New York Times list. It's a whole racket. The whole thing is ridiculous. All these people are they're just buying status. Like, right. No one cares about them or their books, so they have to pretend that people do. It's so ridiculous. And people, I think, have figured this out for the most part. If you're young or starting off and you're just trying to build a brand or a company, the thing I would recommend, I would definitely recommend writing a book, but I would recommend writing a great book that is very niche and narrow. And because the more niche and narrow you are, the less competition you have, right?
Mm.
So like how many books about SEO are out there? I mean, countless, right?
Right?
How many books are out there about how dentists can use SEO? Probably not any, right? And so if all of a sudden you're not the SEO guy, you're the SEO guy for dentists, right?
Right.
Now you've got a much smaller market, but that market, you're the first person that market's going to talk to. And right. I promise you, dentists need to advertise on Google. and they need to advertise on Yelp and whatever, right? So if you can nail that market, now you are the big dog in that market. Now you can do SEO for chiropractors and then orthopedics, and then now you're then all of a sudden in 5 years you're the SEO guy for all doctors or all medical professionals. Now that's a massive market, right?
Right.
I did it not by trying to be famous or trying to be everything to everybody. You did it by nailing a specific thing that people that had money and a problem needed to solve.
And serving the hell out of them.
Right. Exactly. And, and the way you establish your credibility is a book, right? But the book, that's the thing, is the book's got to be good. Like, it can't be a BS book. Right. And at this point, here's the thing, is like, no one cares. If you're talking about readers, no one cares that Simon & Schuster published your book. If you're talking about SEO for dentists, for example, they care that your book teaches them what they actually need to know.
Right.
Right? And if you're really good, what the book is, it's not even a business card. The book is like a resume. The book is like, okay, I get it. This guy is really smart. He really knows his stuff, but I'm a dentist. I want to pull cavities out of people's mouths. I don't want to spend time on my computer. So instead, I'm just going to go use his software product, or I'm going to hire him or his firm. The book is about that dentist figuring out you're the guy he should hire.
Right, right. Because you wrote specifically to him.
Right, exactly. You wrote the book on it.
So, like, all right. So here's a question I've got. Like almost every day, an author or like a publicist or publisher they'll email me or send me a book. And they're trying to get featured on Flashbooks or get an interview on this podcast. And like probably more than half of them, definitely more than half of them are crappy books. They're BS books.
Yes.
And so my question is, what are your suggestions for somebody who wants to take a crappy book that they've already written, right? Mm-hmm. And turn it into a good one?
Right. So the first thing I would do is take that book down.
Take it down.
Right. Well, because a bad book it really acts as a negative signal. Like if you have no profile, it depends. I'm not going to say a bad book is always better than no book. For a lot of people, a bad book is better than no book. I will admit that, but not for everybody. But once you have a bad book, you have some profile, you sold some things, you want to actually move up, I would take that down. And then I would either hire us, or if we're too expensive, then go buy the book. Or get the book for free off our site, and walk through that process. Because what our process does is that it forces you to actually know what you're talking about.
Structure.
Right? Yeah, it forces you to structure it, but it forces you to actually have something to say. We've turned down 20 to 25% of the people who come to us with money ready to start, because we walk through the basic steps of the process before we even sign with them to make sure they actually have a book in them. Mm. Because our process exposes you. You know, I mean, think about what's question three? What do you have to say that's interesting and valuable to that audience? And most people, they'll say, oh, well, like I can teach them how to be happy. It's like, okay. Explain exactly how I can be happy.
Who are you going to teach to be happy? How are you going to teach them to be happy? Happiness about what? At work, at home, in your marriage?
And listen, so a lot of people can answer those questions very clearly. And it's like, awesome, great, we're ready to work with you. But if you can't answer those questions clearly, what that means is you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you need to go back to the drawing board and figure it out. That happens a lot too with people. Is that they come to us and they realize they don't actually know what they think they know as deeply as they think they know it. So then they go and do a little bit of research and actually kind of say and figure out, maybe they're good at training people, but they don't know why they're good. So they have to go back to kind of the drawing board and be like, okay, what am I doing that's working? And then they come back to us and they say, okay, I figured out what I'm doing. It's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It's like, okay, that's great. Now we can do the book. You know,
nice.
So that's really what I would recommend to people. Even if you have a book out and it's not very good, is you need to take it down, and then really clearly do another one and clearly ask yourself, what do I know that is valuable and interesting to an audience I'm trying to reach?
Hmm. And you guys, you just published another book last year too, didn't you? Called Mate.
Yeah.
I just picked it up. I mean, I'm a happily married man. And the book, by the way, is all about, you know, attracting the woman, the right woman for yourself, whether you're dating or trying to get into a relationship. Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did you publish that under?
No,
how did you guys do that?
Well, so I actually did that deal and finished that book before Book in a Box came into existence.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Remember I told you the only people who should be going to traditional publishers are the ones who have big audiences who can get big advances?
Right, which
I fell into that category.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny because for my last two books in Fratire, like the sort of humor books I wrote, I actually started my own publishing company and I distributed through Simon & Schuster. And then for Mate, the guy I paired up with, Jeffrey Miller.
Which, by the way, the book is, I mean, from what I've read so far, it's really freaking good. Whether you're trying to find a girlfriend or not, or trying to find a relationship or not, like just the first part on confidence was so good. You guys were talking about the growth mindset and all of that. Just thought I'd let you know.
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we wrote the book that we wished existed when we were 16 that could just walk us through women and relationships and understanding sort of all the basics and fundamentals, right? So if you're like I am and you are, you know, 30s and 40s and married and have kids, you probably don't need it that much. But if you're in your teens and 20s and even 30s and you're not doing well or you're not doing as well as you want, it's a great book for you.
Definitely.
But anyway, so Little Brown offered us a big seven-figure advance for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that's fine. I mean, it's essentially free money, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And so we took it. And also this sort of book I didn't want to build a company off of this book. I just wanted to write this book and get it out there and it kind of as a service because so many guys have been asking me these questions about how to deal with women for so long. And I'm good enough that I had a lot to teach, at least the basics. And so that came out about a year ago. It was so funny, man. I turned the manuscript in like the summer of 2014 and then Book in a Box took off in August 2014 out of nowhere.
Oh, nice.
And so I know. So by the time it came to promote Mate, I had forgotten about it, dude. Like because it was a year, it was 12 or 13, 14 months later, because that's how slow traditional publishers are.
Right.
So they were like, hey, it's, you know, we have 3 months until the release. What are your plans? And I was like, oh God, I totally forgot I have to release this book. So it was.
You're the only author I know who forgets about a book he's got coming out. That's wild.
I was building a company, dude.
That's crazy.
And I had a kid.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was things that are 10 times more important to me than this book.
Definitely. Yeah. So what are some of your favorite books, man? Before we close it out, what are some of your own personal favorite nonfiction books? It's something I always like to ask that you found inspiring.
What? A couple of
business books, a couple of personal development books that have influenced you and inspired you.
Right. So I don't separate personal development and business.
That's good in
my mind. To me, and I don't really. It's like work-life balance. Like I don't believe in it. Like I love.
Right.
I spend my entire life doing things I love, and I love my family, and I love the things I do. And so you know, I kind of split them up. It's like I don't work to me is not something. Oh God, I gotta balance this with something I actually like. No, I don't believe in that. So let me give you the two books that come back whenever someone asks me this question. They're not the ones I might think of initially, but they're always ones that come to my head. The first one is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I'm sure you've heard of that book. It's super famous. But most people don't think of it as a business book. I actually look at it as an entrepreneurship business book. One, because I don't separate entrepreneurship from personal development, but two, because the mindset that Viktor Frankl has for life is literally perfect for entrepreneurship. It's sort of like you focus on the things that matter, you work, you know, do the things you can, you don't let, the dude survived a concentration camp.
Right.
There's nothing you're going to face as an entrepreneur that's going to be that hard. Although for most entrepreneurs, they feel like it's life and death, right?
Yeah.
But it's not. And that's kind of the great insight from Man's Search for Meaning is that even things that are life and death are actually aren't. And I know it sounds weirdly paradoxical, but like that's really the actual sort of lesson from that book. And then the other book I always come back to is The Trauma of Everyday Life, which is this book by Mark Epstein. And it's about essentially a psychoanalytic reading of the Buddha's life. And it sounds like ridiculously pedantic and academic, right? Except it's not. It's the opposite. It's one of the most brilliant things I've ever read.
The trauma of everyday life.
The trauma of everyday life, yeah. It might be a little bit, if you start it and you feel like this is just way over your head, there's another book called 10% Happier, which is sort of like the...
Right, yeah, that's a good book.
Right, 10% Happier is like the beginner's version of the trauma of everyday life. It's about how do you deal with your emotions and the thoughts in your head and the things that you can't get away from and you can't run from. You know you've got to deal with them, but how do you do it? It's how to do it, but it doesn't tell you how to do it. It tells you how the Buddha did it, right? Mm. But it's not preaching Buddhism. It's like, here's what this guy did. All Buddhism is how this Indian dude fixed his emotional problems.
Right.
That's what it is. That's what Buddhism as an ethical moral system is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mark Epstein explains exactly what the Buddha did and why he did it in a way that makes so much sense and is totally accessible and strips away all of the kind of nonsense that comes
with
a lot of
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think Mark Epstein is the guy who Dan Harris talks about in 10%,
yeah.
10% here.
Exactly.
Happier, I think, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah, exactly. He wrote some other books like Psychotherapy Without a Self and Thoughts Without a Thinker. Those tend to be far more academic. Trauma of Everyday Life, at least for me, was like mind blowing. It was like the next step. If you're into personal development and you're kind of stuck, that's the book that that for a lot of people helps you get to the next step.
Good stuff, man. Well, let's move on to the final question. It's the same question that I ask every single one of my guests here on the show.
Shoot.
And that is, what does it mean to you specifically, Tucker, to live a meaningful life?
It's a great question. Two things. I spend as much time as I can with the people. Let me start this again.
Sure.
The only things that matter to me, the only things that are meaningful to me, are the relationships I have with the people I love and the work I do that benefits them and the world. And that's it.
Awesome. Awesome. Real quick before we go, if you could tell everybody how they could get in touch with you, where they could find you, Book in a Box,
right.
Your blog, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Company is bookinabox.com. If it sounds interesting, you want to work with us, fill out the form. We'll get on the phone, talk it out. If you love the process, but you want to do it yourself, no problem. Go to bookinabox.com/. Actually, I forgot my assistant set up a page for you, dude, for your fans. It's bookinabox.com/meaningful, and it has the PDF right on there. You can get it for free. Obviously, you can buy it on Amazon if you want, but I'm happy to give it to your audience for free. It describes our exact process, all our exact templates, the example outlines. It has everything in there you need to do this yourself.
Nice.
So whether you're thinking about writing a book, listen, if you're thinking about writing a book, you should do it probably. If your time is really valuable, then that means you have a lot of money. Call us. If your time's not really valuable, then you should do it yourself. Use the book. That's the best way to get a hold of me, I think.
Good stuff. Good stuff, man. Thanks for being here. And as always, guys, if you want to get all these resources, any of the show notes, the links, everything that Tucker just talked about, we'll have all that stuff linked up for you over at meaningfulhq.com or at getflashnotes.com. Thanks so much for stopping by, Tucker. Until next time, guys, go out there every single day and live like you give a damn. It's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.